The following programming is sponsored by Father James N. Drucker. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Dan Hutt present Harms, because there is a retired U.S. Air Force captain in the room. Honorable service during Desert Storm. But I guess you should salute from a kneeling position, because although people say he's one hell of a disc jockey, he's also an ordained Catholic priest. Here he is, Philly's doo-wop priest, Father Jim Drucker.
Rock and Roll Reveille is a sole production of Father Jim Drucker's Drucker Music Publishing, Broadcast Music Incorporated.
Welcome to Philadelphia's new show of doo-wop music and a caring for our military veterans, especially in Philadelphia and the area. Our show will feature doo-wop music and celebrity recording artists live in studio and by phone. Heard here Saturdays at 4 p.m. on WWDB 860 AM. Simulcast, also heard on WPEN FM 97.5 HD2.
I'd like to tell you that I'm very proud to have known this guy, Father Jim Drucker, for many, many years. He's Philly's doo-wop priest, and the show is Rock and Roll Reveille at WWDB AM 860 on your dial.
The world on you depends, our life. life will never end. Gotta love your man.
Father Jim Drucker back on the radio in Philadelphia. Can you believe this? First of all, I want to thank you, God. Thank you for life. Thank you for Matthew Manarik, Sergeant First Class, ladies and gentlemen, in Iraq. A soldier engineering this show. Can you? I'm crying here. It's military. Bring up the music, a little music in there. Blinking it, please. I'm so nervous here. It's wonderful. I can't tell you how great it is to be back on the air in Philadelphia, my hometown, fourth largest city in America. We have a guest today. He's remarkable. I don't have enough words to share his story. And I want to, first of all, say to all veterans in the audience, everybody, jump in. We love you.
We love you.
Yeah. And I want to introduce Gordon Bucker. Say a quick hello to the audience.
Hi, folks.
And Betsy, his wife.
Good afternoon.
A little closer to the mic. Jeanine.
Hey, everybody.
And Doc, of course.
Hello, my friends.
And Billy Carlucci is not with us today, with Riders in the Storm in the background. Jim Morrison, knockout song. All songs picked by the guests on the show of the day of their show. Billy Carlucci is celebrating his anniversary, he and Gene. We want to send you our blessings and love. We're going to sing a little song a little bit later for you. And I want to thank all our veterans living and all the veterans who gave their lives throughout the world, including Gordon and Doc and Betsy and Janine. And Matthew, my oldest brother, Joseph Edward Drucker, was a Tagalier, 8th Air Force, Flying Fortress. He died in 1945, was 3 years old. He gave his life for our country and is buried at Great Ashfield. He's buried at Cambridge Cemetery. It's actually Mattingly Cemetery in Cambridge, England. I'm the only one in our family that got there, saw his grave, cried more, where he flew the missions of his 385th Bombardment Group, 551st Bombardment Squadron, and a farmer owned it. Was weeds growing out of the tarmac. It was a wonderful thing being there with the soul of my brother. So all those who have given their lives, like my brother Joseph and my brother Paul, was submarine, Second World War. He just passed away about 5 years ago. So all of you, I love you all. And today's show is dedicated to a gentleman that received not once, ladies and gentlemen, but twice, the honorable award of the Distinguished Flying Cross with Oak Leaf Cluster. Twice. Air Medal with 7 Oak Leaf Clusters, Air Force Commendation Medal, and the Purple Heart. So I want to introduce now and have Gordon start to tell a little bit about his story of being an AC-130A gunship aircraft commander, gunship. He was a fire officer, navigator. It's tremendous stuff. And how he received 100% service connection. He's going to tell the story right now. Gordon, please.
Okay. Thank you, Father. Years ago, I joined the Air Force in 1968. I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
You were in college first. You received your baccalaureate degree, correct?
From Marietta.
And then you were going for postgraduate for economics, as Betsy Shirley earlier, lovely wife. What happened then?
Okay, 2 years into my graduate work, the Vietnam War started to get really hot and heavy. And I had a 2S deferment. And I had...
That's a school deferment, correct?
A school deferment. It's exactly right, Father.
Right.
And I couldn't live with myself seeing other young men go off to war and me not being physically able to do so. So
instead of going into college to get out of war, you left college to go into war.
Exactly right.
My God, what a show. Go ahead,
and
please.
And so I took the test, passed, and I got accepted by the Air Force in their officer training school.
And where was that at?
That was in Texas.
Oh, San Antonio.
Yes, San Antonio.
That's where I was. My last base of assignment when he came back from Desert Storm was Lackland Air Force Base, and I was on the permanent party side, and you were on the training side, the other side, the other side of the big highway.
Yeah, it was actually the Randolph Air Force Base, which was part of Lackland.
Right next door.
Right.
And you know what? When I was overseas in Turkey, all the secret information, I shouldn't say this, they may shoot me after the show, but all the secret information was being sent back from all the Russian stuff was being sent back to Randolph to be translated and all that stuff. But anyway, continue.
So I passed that, and I went to pilot training. And my pilot training, my air work wasn't good. So they washed me out and sent me to NAV school.
A good-looking fellow like you washed out of pilot school, you know, I'll tell you.
God acts in mysterious ways.
Let me tell you about it. 46 years of priesthood? Yeah, are you kidding me? Yeah. He chose me? That couldn't be more mysterious than that. Yeah, well, I'm off the wall kid from Kensington, K&A. And 46 years ago, I thought it said celebrate. I messed up. Go ahead.
Father, he doesn't make mistakes.
I know that, Gordon. I well know that.
So he put you right where you belong. All right. So what I'm trying to say is, I would have made maybe a mediocre pilot, but they put me into navigator training, and I became an unbelievably good navigator. And so that's where I really belong. So I went into navigation, and my my first duty assignment was the 119 gunship.
What base?
That was at, let me see, it was Rickenbacker Air Force Base.
Oh, that's right. It's Ohio.
Ohio, yeah. Yes. Columbus, Ohio.
I've been there many times. I knew the two-star was the commander there.
So he, before I would go overseas, they noticed a lump in my neck. And they said, that has to come out before you fly combat.
While you're active duty.
I'm active duty. I've just passed my check ride in flying 119s. I go in, to make a long story short, I go into the hospital at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in near Dayton, and they take it out, and it's tested both follicular and medullary cancer.
Oh, God bless you.
Oh, my.
And on December 22nd, 1969, they did this radical neck, and I had no thyroid, and they 4 months later, I was put on temporary disability retirement with 100% disability, which I could have turned into the VA for 100%.
I got to tell you this. It's impossible. I was a VA chaplain for so many years, 10 years. I used to fight, almost lie, never lied, almost, to get veterans their benefits. Just 10%. Yeah. You got 100. That's got it work for sure. Yeah.
So I, when I left the service, I had to make a choice of how I wanted to live my life. And what I decided on were three things. I wanted to work for my father on the line. It was hard physical work to build back my physicality.
Okay.
I wanted to take math because my math background was weak. And then I also wanted to teach because I liked teaching.
Okay.
And I did all three, and they all came back to help me later in my Air Force career.
God's path.
Exactly right. It's just, so at any rate.
So now you got 100%, right?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I want to give a shout-out to Anthony Webb, who was the second or third command at Logic at McGuire Air Force Base, or as Janine calls it, Fort McGuire. She doesn't know the difference. I shouldn't pick her on the air. But anyway, I told him about your story. He said, Father, you're kidding me at 100%, and he left to go back to active duty, and he gave that up. Share it.
Yeah, what happened was I was in the middle of teaching, taking courses in calculus and integrals, and a friend of mine wrote to me and said that the Air Force had taken guys back if they could pass a Class II physical. So I called down to the flight surgeon's office at Randolph. I spoke to a full colonel doctor, and he took my information, and that started a process that lasted about 8 months. And then they asked me when they initially were going to accept me, said, what airplanes you want to fly? And I told them I want to fly the AC-130 gunship. And the colonel doctor told me I can't do that because I have to take thyroid pills the rest of my life. And I told the colonel, if I don't come back as a fully rated navigator, I'm not coming back. I'll stay 100%. But I'm not going to not take a soft position from another navigator because you won't let me fly combat. He said, well, that's going to take more time. And then as you see from what I gave you, it took another 4 months. And it had to literally go to the President of the United States.
Oh, wait a minute. We have it. Is this the one I have here?
Yeah, that's exactly so what
I'm going to read this. Department of the Air Force, Washington, 15 October 1971. I was rocking a WARM radio. Yeah. Anyway, by direction of the President, First Lieutenant Gordon L. Bakker. You're going to correct me?
Yes,
on
right.
the air? A Catholic priest? That's right. You're a major. I'm only a cop, but I have to give it. And your Social Security number, your service number, USFAR, to presently on the temporary disability retired list, rated on flying status, yada, yada, SIOSAT, New York, having been determined physically qualified.
Yep.
And you gave 100% up. Yep. And it was, wait a minute, it was signed by, what, you're kidding me, John D. Ryan, Chief of Staff?
Yeah.
God, you know people. I'm sticking close to you, dude. If I want to go back in, can I go back in? Do you too? Do I have a shot? Do I have a shot, please?
The people.
Why don't you go with him, Father?
I need a seance to talk to the people that are on that. But how many lieutenants have orders at the direction of the President signed by Chief of Staff Air Force?
Mm-hmm.
Air Raid. So I went into gunships. And my first duty assignment was going to ground school at Lowry Air Force Base in Denver. And I told them I want to be a fire control officer. And they told me I didn't have the rank or the background. And I said, let me take the test for both. I passed both. I go down to flight training.
You're a smart man.
And I did the same thing. I said, they said, you're supposed to be a sensor operator. I said, no, I want to be a fire control officer. Let me take the test for both. The check ride for both, and I did. I passed both with flying colors. What I didn't know at the time was all my training reports were going every day 12,000 miles to Uban Rashatani, where the 16th Special Operations were conducting combat operations from eastern Thailand.
Now, you realize what you're doing to me? We're going to have to cut music. Just to hear you talk.
Oh, well,
this is outrageous. Where's the rock and roll reveille? Come on.
We're listening to it down
on.
The
that's
road
right.
here.
Come on. I just want to...
Relax. Rock on, man. Come on.
The guy who read these training reports was right. Major Conrad Story, the flight examiner pilot. And he took one look at these training reports and he says, Bakker, crew number one, I want him because fire control officers are really hard to come by, good ones.
And he really know how to call you Bakker, not like me,
well,
Boker.
He learned, and that's why my nickname is Box, because they couldn't pronounce my last name, so everyone calls me Box.
Listen, we're going to talk more.
Oh, yes, sir.
We have to play one song to get the audience. We got to get them rocked up here, rock and roll reveille. And we're going to talk about somebody that read your book, Storm Rider. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So this is the song you picked. I love this song. It was Mama Cass was in the group. What about the – why do you like this song so much?
I was – at the time, I was in Nav School, and I was dating –
where?
At Sacramento, California,
okay.
Mather Air Force Base.
Okay.
And this is way before I met my wife. It's the first girl I fell in love with, and we were dating, and this was the song, one of the songs that we, you know, we did together.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mamas and the Papas, 1966, number one, 3 minutes of wild, great music by the Mamas and the Papas on Monday, Monday.
Ba-da.
Here's to me. Here's to a happy anniversary.
Well, thanks to Janine, I'm sucking on a mint here, which you never do on radio, but she got us stuck on these mints and driving me crazy. Billy Carlucci is in the, wait a minute, don't interrupt. I'm the star here. Billy, you're on the air. I love you. You're celebrating 30 years. How could she handle this, your wife?
Well, we met at a candy store. She smiled at me. You get the picture?
She was sweeter than candy.
Well, that's like Jimmy Rogers, sweeter than kisses.
Yeah.
So, Billy, what do you want? Add to the show. Are you listening to the show with Gordon, Betsy, and Doc, and Janine and I?
Yes, I'm listening to all. I love Janine. I love the Doc. I love you. And it's a great show. It's one of a kind. I'm so happy to be with you guys.
Now, let's do it together. Keep the music going. Ready, all of us together. One, two. Happy anniversary to you.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary,
Billy Carlucci and Jeannie.
Happy anniversary to you and many more.
Thank you so much, but somebody's got to tighten up that harmony.
I'm a hopeless case.
Give our love and our kisses to... Is it Jeannie or Jean? Is it Jeannie or Jean?
Jean.
Listen, Jeannie. And she's a judge, isn't she?
She was. No, she was a VA for a long time. And now she's she's an attorney, and she's... just the nicest girl in the world.
I hope she doesn't take this show to court because we're doomed. Billy, I love you. I love the Gene, and may God grant you in Russian, may Naum Hayalita.
Hayalita means many years.
Hayalita.
Hayalita.
May God grant you many more blessed, happy, holy, and healthy years. Billy,
happy anniversary,
and Jean,
Billy.
We love you.
Gordon, Lieutenant Colonel Savicki here. Blessings to have you us today. Your book, Storm Rider, freaking unbelievable. It discusses the tragedies of combat, especially veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And I often tell them, call 988 or text 988 for help. Tell me what happened in Vietnam.
On June 18th, 1972, I was flying with my hooch mate, Paul Gilbert, on a crew that made up five different crews. And we got orders into the offshore. First frag, we were on station at 8:30. 20 minutes on into station, we were attacked by an SA-7 missile, which hit our number 3 engine. Paul Gilbert was the pilot. He was the instructor pilot. In the left seat was Captain Wilson. And Paul could see out the right window that the engine was on fire. So he took control of the airplane because he was the instructor.
Right.
I could hear, I said, I got it. And he then instructed the flight engineer for fire suppression number 3, which the engineer rogered, and it didn't go out. So he dove the airplane in an attempt using fire suppression and dived the airplane to put out the fire and pulled up about 2,000 or 3,000 feet because it wasn't working. And that's when he rang the alarm bell. When we took the initial hit, the two guys in the front of the booth, the BC operator, Black Crow, and the infrared operator, went out the back of the booth trying to get to the open aft end of the plane, which is always open in a gunship.
Right.
And when Paul dove the airplane, they were thrown into near the cockpit to the front of the airplane. When he pulled it straight and level, then he rang the alarm bell and called abandoned ship. Mm-hmm. And that's when the TV operator and myself left the booth, and we got maybe 4 feet when the right wing fell off. And the plane went to a flat spin.
Unbelievable.
I was experienced between 11 and 13 Gs as the plane was spinning. You couldn't move. And I looked around me and I could see all the gunners plastered against the inside part of the airplane as kind of black shadows. And everything was red because the plane was on fire. And I really thought that this was it, because I couldn't move. I couldn't get
this
out of the airplane.
Yes.
And the last conscious thought I had were two things. I was glad that I was in the company of the men that I was with, because you can't get better company in the world.
Could you name some of them?
No, I can't. Okay. Paul Gilbert and the two survivors, I can tell you. It was Vic Reed and...
God bless you.
Bill Patterson.
God bless you, courageous men.
Harry, so they were there plastered, and that was the first conscious... And the second thing, and the last conscious thought I had was going back to the Lord of the Rings, when the ring goes into the fire.
Yes.
And Frodo leaves Mount Orodum with Samwise, and they're on a little hill with a sea of lava all around them. And he turns to Samwise, and he says, "I am glad you're with me here at the end of all things." That was my last conscious thought. Next thing I know, everything went white, then everything went black, and...
You literally went ballistic.
And I just... Yeah, I was blown out of the airplane, and I didn't even know it until I opened my eyes, and all of a sudden I felt cool. I wasn't hot anymore. I wasn't around the fire. And I'm looking around, and the light from the burning airplane showed me the trees coming at me. So I pulled the D-ring, as I was trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in Vietnam, you're going to land in jungle. And I did my tree penetration, and by the time I stopped falling, I was about 3 feet from the ground, and spent the next 13 and a half hours avoiding the enemy and escape. I don't. It would be a long, long story. I don't want to go into all of
it. No, but God had plans for you, yeah. Raj.
Maybe you'll be there one day. Maybe you'll be there one day. Each time I see a crowd of people.
And this is Doc Savicki on the... Just letting you know, it's Memorial Day coming up on Monday. And it's not about the veterans this time. It's about those that gave their life for their country. The ultimate sacrifice. And that's why we want you to know, maybe you'll be there when a veteran needs you. That's why you're living. We want you there. So let me share with you the folds of the flag that we'll be doing on Memorial Day. The first fold symbolizes life.
The second fold represents a belief in eternal life.
The third fold is made in honor and remembrance of the veterans who gave their lives in defense of the country in order to help attain peace throughout the world.
The fourth fold is in recognition of the nature of the country's citizens to trust in God.
The fifth fold is a tribute to the United States. According to Stephen Decatur, naval commander during the American Revolution and War of 1812, our country, in dealing with other countries, may she always be right, but it is still our country, right or wrong.
And the sixfold symbolizes where people's hearts lie, in keeping with the words of our Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all.
The sevenfold pays tribute to the armed forces. After all, through our armed forces, the United States is protected against all enemies.
The eightfold is a tribute to those who died, and as Psalm 23 states, entered into the valley of the shadow of death.
The ninthfold honors womanhood.
The tenthfold is a tribute to fathers.
The eleventhfold represents the lower portion of the seal of King David and King Solomon and glorifies in Judaism the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
The twelfthfold represents an emblem of eternity and glorifies, in the eyes of Christians, God the Father,
the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
The 13th and last fold reminds us, when the flag is completely folded in the uppermost corner, signifying our nation's motto, "In God We Trust." Amen. All my brother and sister veterans, we bless you. We thank you for your service to our country, and we will never forget you. And our veterans with us, remember, we'll be there. We'll be there. God bless you all.
And your number, Doc?
988 is the text or to call, or my number, 856-278-4042, Dr. Savicki.
Each time I see a crowd of
Gordon, you left us hanging in a tree, or rather, we left you hanging in a tree. What happened?
Well, I spent 13 and a half hours on the floor of the valley. We were supposed to be rescued at first light, but there was so much ground fire that they couldn't. And one thing I want everybody to know, that every F-4 Phantom jet in Southeast Asia came into the Yorkshire Valley that day to get our rescue accomplished. Mm-hmm. And instead of the normal drop out to 6,000 feet, they were dropping below my altitude. I was at the top end of the Yorkshire, coming in at 700 or 800 feet, and dropping ordnance. It took them 3 hours, every F-4 in Southeast Asia. And finally, at 9:30, the chopper came in and picked the three of us up. I want to say one thing about Paul Gilbert the doc was saying. I remember him. My son is Joshua Paul Barker. He is named after
wonderful.
Him. And he was a wonderful man. He was my hooch mate. He was engaged to marry a lovely woman, and that didn't happen.
Now, you received the Distinguished Flying Cross for this mission, did you?
Yes,
not?
Sir, I did. The Distinguished Flying Cross for Valor, which is the fourth highest medal you can receive
That's
in the United
correct.
States Air Force.
And you received another Distinguished Flying Cross.
Yes, sir. And that was for a mission in February. We destroyed...
February what year?
73. We destroyed
on a gunship.
On a gunship, yes, sir.
It's an AC-130A.
Yes, sir. Right. And it's it was a very, very effective weapon system for both interdiction and ground support.
Mm-hmm. You have written a book called Storm Rider. Tell us how that came to be.
Yeah, well, when I retired from all work in 2008. And in fact, one of the reasons I retired was because I had a waking dream, and I couldn't do traffic anymore.
You were an air traffic controller. Let the audience know that.
Air traffic controller.
27 years.
27 years, and I would not go on because I didn't want to put a pilot in danger. So I retired, and my son said to me, Dad, you have so many interesting stories. Why don't you write a book? So I started writing. It took me 12 years to write Storm Rider.
Wow.
For me to learn how to write and get it right so that when you read it, I try and put you or the reader in the cockpit with me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's a novel but based on true events, correct? A lot of authors do that, don't they?
Yeah.
A lot of veteran authors.
Yeah, when you read the preface, everything about the Air Force and air traffic control is exactly what there's no... No fiction at all. It is what you're getting is a first-hand account.
I'd like to bring on the air with us right now one of our previous guests twice, Dennis Skirvin, Vietnam veteran, who has helped a MASH doctor write his current book, which you have in your hands, yep. Gordon. And let me see what the title is because I had to take a picture of it. The backside of the firefighter. Surgeon's shop. Notes from Vietnam. Dennis, welcome aboard.
And hey, Dennis, good buddy.
You're there, Dennis. Hey. Jump in.
Yes. Greetings to everyone.
Bring the mic up.
Greetings to everyone. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
And to you,
Gordon,
Dennis.
It's a pleasure to listen to you. You have an amazing story. Well, absolutely amazing story. And it was a pleasure to meet you the other day via the telephone. I greatly appreciated that, and I wish you all the best.
Dennis, you wrote a couple novels that were related to Vietnam, but they're novels, and the similar thing with Gordon with his book is a novel, but true events.
Yes. Well, Gordon had a special reason for fictionalizing or writing a novel.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And I
did.
Sort of did, too. Yeah, and I chose to go that route with my novel, too, The Short Timer. But Dr. Davies is a first-person account of his time in two different hospitals in Chu Lai. He spent two tours there, the second surgical hospital in Chu Lai and the 27th. And it's the backside of the firefighters is an amazing story.
And he's going to be our guest in June, along with you in studio live. Now, Dennis, give me a second. I have an article here.
Sure.
I think this was an email, Gordon, correct?
From George Hathaway.
It said Box, which is Gordon's nickname for Bocker. I acquired several copies of the book Storm Rider and passed them out to friends who enjoyed the read, but seemed to think that you were a tad cocky and bragged a lot on yourself, to which I replied, it isn't bragging if you can do it. Talk about your buddy Hatton.
Yeah.
Is it trike or trick?
Trick, hat trick.
And he was one of your members on the plane, right?
Yeah, one of my main crew, one of the 14 men that made up crew number one. He was a senior major. He was a TV, low-light TV operator. And we flew maybe 100 missions together. He knew what I could do. And I'm not bragging. Just flat tell you, when our base came under attack and they could only launch one airplane, it was crew number one they launched.
That's your crew.
That's my crew. And because when you're in desperate need, you send the best. And nobody on that base would argue that crew number one was not the best.
Now, Betsy, I want you to jump in. You haven't talked
yet. Yes, I wanted to say that it was the Spectre gunships.
Okay.
Gordon was on Spectre 1-1. And because he was in the most defoliated area of Vietnam when he was shot down, he was, of course, exposed to Agent Orange,
yes.
which decades later, has come back to play a part in his life, giving him,
God bless him,
stage 4 mantle cell lymphoma, for my which God. He is being treated holistically. And it's the gift that keeps on giving, so to speak. Yeah. And yet, if you asked him if he would do it again, you know what his answer would be.
Give us the answer, Gordon.
In a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
The year I spent there was the most difficult year of my life. And I transitioned from a boy to a man in that year. It was just...
That happens so often.
And then you came back to your percentage, a better percentage, I'm sure.
Well, when I got with out of the Air Force, 1980, they gave me 20%.
Oh, wow. Aren't they nice people?
And then, it was difficult. When I first married Betsy, I was suffering from PTSD, which, you know, the doc can attest to. I had a gun under my pillow, and any loud noise, and I go crazy. And it was very difficult because I was, with Betsy, had a daughter from a previous marriage. And I be honest with you, I was a lousy stepfather. I didn't know what I didn't know. And a couple of years into this, and with some help from psychiatric people in the VA, I started to understand what my role should be. And
so they helped you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Thank God. As you know, we got to tell the audience, because you may just be first-time listener. By the way, 888-329-3306. Dr. Andrew Savicki Lieutenant Colonel, psychologist in the Air Force. He was a Marine, is a Mustang, and he's also the head of the New Jersey prison system, the head psychologist. Doc.
Now, Gordon, I wanted to let you know that many times many veterans suffer with PTSD, but they take that energy that they want to turn towards themselves and turn it into community work. Tell me some of the community work you've done that kind of... And be a lesson to others. You don't have to hurt yourself. Use that energy and love and do good things.
Yeah, I turned to coaching and officiating sporting events.
And how many lives have you saved by doing that?
I have no idea. All I know is that I did my best to bring out the best in the children that were entrusted to me as a coach. And when I officiated games, to give them the fairest game that I could give them.
Gordon, it's called God's work. We're doing this for God's work. Betsy, go ahead.
The other thing was that Gordy is Jewish, and he was a commander of Jewish War Veterans in Cherry Hill, post 126.
Wonderful.
They do all kinds of work for the veterans' homes, particularly in Vineland, and other fundraising and wonderful things. But also, close to his heart was Heroes to Heroes program, which takes American soldiers who are very damaged, mostly not Jewish, and send them to Israel to work with the IDF because they experience PTS on a regular basis every day because they're, you know, they're never not exposed.
It helps both the Israeli soldier and the American soldier.
You're right. You're right, Gordon.
And we did a fundraiser. And in one night, I raised how much?
I'll tell you what, let's get a little more music. We got to bring some music. Keep this audience alive. Keep them with us at WWDB AM 860. Father Jim Drucker, and this is Rock and Roll Reveille. We're going to play a song you picked by Peter, Paul, and Mary, written by Bob Dylan.
It ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It don't matter anyhow. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe, if you don't know by now. When the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. Light I never know. It ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. I'm on the dark side of the road. Still I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. We never did to much talking anyway. So don't think twice, it's all right. I'm walking down that long, lonesome road, babe, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye is too good a word, gal, so I'll just say fare thee well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just sort of wasted my precious time, but don't think twice, it's all right. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never did before. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal.
Now, Betsy, I hate to admit that I was a little rude in cutting you off. Explain the rest of the story, and then we're going to talk about some of your work, and Janine's going to talk about that with you.
I just wanted to mention that we raised $18,000, which sent several people.
This is for the Heroes to Heroes?
Heroes to Heroes Foundation, right.
And how can they get information out of the veterans especially?
They can look it up online, and there's an office in New Jersey, and the director is Judy Schaefer.
You have a phone number?
I would have to look it up.
Good. Well, when we come back to Gordon, okay. You look it up, we'll give it at the end. Janine?
And Gordon isn't the only talented author in here. Betsy has also written several books. Can you tell us about some of the books that you've written?
Well, yes, I wrote two books. As Gordy suggested with his book, it took him 12 years to write. And to get it really done right, it does take a long time. And it took me 12 years as well to perfect particularly the second edition of my book, which is called Beware, A Multisensory Approach to the Holocaust. It's a unique approach, never been done before. It's a visceral book. It's a psychosocial approach, and it's coordinated with the anti-bullying and anti-harassment initiatives with the state of New Jersey, whose Holocaust Commission has just purchased these books to give to all of the schools of higher education.
Wonderful.
In the state. My second book is called The King's Worry Tree. That's a children's book, whereas the Holocaust book is for children maybe 10 and up through college, good for private schools, public schools, religious schools, and so forth. And the children's book, The King's Worry Tree, deals with anxiety and the concerns that children have in today's crazy world. And it gives them an opportunity and encouragement to talk about their fears and concerns with adults, counselors, friends, and so forth.
How can they obtain these books?
They're available on Amazon and or by contacting us directly if they would like signed copies.
Wonderful. Now, Gordon, how can they obtain Stormrider? And you have also wrote a book called Emma. Talk a little bit about that.
The Emma Effect is a story of a man's travel through a horrible situation, suffering PTS, not combat, but of a personal nature, mm-hmm. and how a psychiatrist and a wonderful woman and a general help him find his way as a man. It's a beautifully, I think it's got rave reviews in Amazon, and it's a story really about wisdom, how important that is, and as this gentleman goes through what he goes through, he starts acquiring wisdom and starts making wise choices regarding his life, and I think it's a really good book, and I gave sold a copy to one of the women that's taking the same cancer treatment I'm taking, and she had trouble getting through it because it was so. It hit her so hard, and then I said, just see it through, and she did, and she loved the book. It's a book that people take the characters, and you think you're part of it.
Excellent.
Now, regarding Stormrider, I'm going to read the rest of this letter you gave in this email from Hat Trick.
Three goals in soccer.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
He ends in the last paragraph, saying to his buddy, Gordon, I remember one flight when the bad guys were really watering our eyes and we were herking and jerking all over the sky, I looked over at you when you took off your brain bucket and reached into your helmet bag and got your bar mitzvah beanie and put it on under your helmet. My God, is this beautiful. I thought, oh, blank, blank, the box is getting ready to meet his maker. I don't know if this incident was on that flight or a similar one, but I looked over at Brother Dave, and he had a lit cigarette in his mouth, another lit cigarette in his hand, and a third lit cigarette in the ashtray. Hey, Brother Dave, got a cigarette?
that's a good example of Air Force.
Stay out of harm's way. I'll tell you what, let's kick right into, I'm not sure if we're following the script, but go right into the Johnny Cash song. Can we do that, Matthew? You're doing a great job, Matthew. Thank you so much. Love you. Sergeant First Class Matthew Manarik.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine. I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm hard on me. Must we say goodbye each time we part? My
By the way, Father, the phone number for Heroes to Heroes is 201-851-2409 or 052-363-9057. And those people out there who are listening who are suffering from PTS, you probably don't think that you're entitled to go on this free trip, but you probably would never regret it.
Thank you. And share the story about Karamea real quickly. By the way, I know Jay and the Americans very well. We're going to have Jay Siegel on sometime soon with the Tokens and Kenny Vance with the Americans. Please.
When I was a coach at Sacred Heart High School in Vineland, this young girl came on my team as a freshman. Her name was Karamea Constantino, and I called her Karamea. On the first day of practice, and I got what for? Because you don't say Karamea unless you're family. Well, after the year was up, she came to my house, gave me a box of chocolates, and she signed it, Karamea. I knew it was part of the family.
Great story.
Back in 1969, I had a group signed to RCA Records, Wayne and Merlin, and I'm in the studios with Jimmy Fogelsong, a recorded great producer, but Ted Darrow wrote She Cried, Jan America's first hit, and in the door walks this fella, John. He said, are you a disc jockey? I said, yeah, I'm at Warm Radio, number one station in America. He said, take this record back, will you play? I said, sure. He said, gives me a copy of Leaving on a Jet Plane, a song you picked, written by John Denver. He was the one. Now listen, next week, We're going to have a great show, another one. And Gordon, I want to thank you. Betsy, I love you. Janine, Billy Carlucci having called in, and Dennis Gervin, and Doc Savicki.
And love we'll you send all. Out certificates to anyone celebrating their anniversary. Call in.
Oh, yeah, do that, please. Let us know. 888-329-3306. And next week, we're going to have George Catazia, who is with AHEPA. He raised $1.5 million for service dogs for veterans, Vietnam and all veterans with PTSD. He'll be on next week for a full hour on our show. Bring that music up. I love you all. Everybody say, we love you.
We love you.
Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day.
I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I think of you. Every song I sing for you. When I come back, I'll wear your wedding ring.